Richard Kimber in Hong Kong.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Ollie Barrett on duty today. Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Wednesday's programme. Are you well? Good, 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 good.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Darren Nesbitt is the founder and editor of The Light. The Light is a brand new newspaper, a real newspaper that you can hold in your hand. And it's free and it's being distributed around the country. In fact, it's had two editions. 50,000 copies of the second edition, October's edition, were printed and are being put into people's letterboxes around the country with articles the likes of which you will never read in the mainstream media. Darren Nesbitt to tell us about the truth. Excuse me, The Light. It's a truth paper, and I'm thrilled to be joined by him this hour. And in the second hour, Zed Phoenix returns to the programme. Zed is a citizen journalist and activist. He's been on with me a couple of times in the last few months, and he's very, very good at knitting together the strands of what's really going on, the story behind the coronavirus pandemic. So, Zed Phoenix in hour two, Darren Nesbitt, the man behind The Light, in hour one. Not too shabby for a Wednesday, if I do say so myself. Hey, there's some good news to kick off today's radio show with. My great friend Mark Pajerski, love the man, can't speak highly enough of him. Mark's birthday was yesterday, I didn't know, I'd have wished him a happy birthday, so belated happy birthday. But he's a granddad today, is Mark Pajerski, because his son Nico, whom I met a few years ago in Manchester, lovely, lovely bloke, Nico has given, Nico hasn't, that would be a miracle, wouldn't it? Nico is a new daddy. He's got a baby boy, so congratulations to Nico and partner. And that makes Mark Pajerski a granddaddy. So congratulations to them, to all involved. Thrilled to hear that. Nice bit of good news to kick off the proceedings with. Hey, did you see that madness this afternoon? That mad story, which kind of, I suppose, if you didn't understand the paradigm that you're in, well, you do now. An amateur football team has kicked off, boom, boom, after going to a Wetherspoons in South Shields, right? That's in the northeast of the country. They went to a Wetherspoons after their game. They got a few beers. And would you believe it? One of the Wetherspoons staff members phoned the police and complained that there were too many of the guys and that they were obviously not from the same household. Therefore, they weren't in social distancing. You couldn't make this up. A pub serves some young men after football, serves them, takes their money, lets them sit outside drinking, and then phones the old bill to complain that they are in breach of the regulations. Yeah, it's true. This is where we are now. Right. Very interesting piece in today's Telegraph from Annabel Fenwick Elliott. Love those double barrel names. Annabel Fenwick Elliott. She's obviously, you know, the thinking man's journalist. Anyway, here's the headline. She's a senior content editor at The Telegraph, and she's a good writer, very good writer. The headline is, I'm almost starting to think this whole pandemic really is a conspiracy. Wow. Our continuing oppressive response to a virus that almost every human survives is making less and less sense. Let me rush through a few lines of this article in The Telegraph by a seemingly posh lady with a double barrel name. Hyphenated surname, I should say. Here she is. COVID-19 was obviously proving to be a bit more virulent than flu, but even early on, it was clear the virus was sparing the vast majority of the population. Those I knew who caught it either suffered symptoms similar to a mild cold or none at all, bemused as the government set about building Nightingale hospitals that would hardly be used and Britain's vibrant cities turned into ghost towns, I kept thinking to myself, when are they going to tell us what's really going on? I was waiting for a revelation that never came. Months went by, Millions of tests were performed, revealing with increasing certainty that here was a virus with a very low death rate indeed. Exact approximations vary, but the survival rate for COVID-19 is thought to be somewhere above 99%, maybe as high as 99.8%. The average age of someone who dies from coronavirus is 82.4, which is nearly identical to the average life expectancy in Britain. Surely we should be focusing on this segment of society protecting them, I thought, as schools closed and businesses went bust. She goes on, between mid-June and mid-September, even as we socialised, holidayed and swapped germs to our heart's content, flu and pneumonia contributed to more weekly deaths than COVID-19. She goes on to talk about Sweden, which didn't lock down. And she goes on to talk about the apocalyptic predictions of Neil Ferguson, of course, Imperial College. And she goes on. She goes on. This is very good. Now, she blames this on Occam's razor. Basically, she concludes that politicians are too stubborn to accept that they've cocked up and to release the restrictions. Occam's razor, right? You understand what Occam's razor is? Don't need to tell you that, right? Okay. Either that, Occam's razor, she says, politicians too stubborn. Either that, she writes, or the conspiracy loonies are right. Elon Musk, or is it Bill Gates, is at the helm of a global plot to turn us all into an army of morose, segregated, muzzled, drone-patrolled test subjects in an alternate reality, purpose as yet unknown, under which free speech is curtailed. Curfews dictate our every movement, and banking is illegal with those outside our designated tribe. And she concludes, which, upon reflection, doesn't sound too many light years away from our current warped reality. They're getting it. Many men and women in media are getting it now. They're understanding it. They realise that something very grave, something that they maybe had hitherto never considered, never imagined, that something terribly dystopian is going on. But it's starting to become apparent to them now. And one or two of them, like Annabel Fenwick Elliott and also Alison Pearson at The Telegraph, are asking questions. But I'll tell you the reason we are fooked. I'll tell you the reason we are fooked, at least momentarily. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. If I was a drag queen, I'd be Debbie Downer. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, right? The reason we're screwed at the moment is maybe there's hope with newspapers like The Light, maybe, and other things going on. We're screwed at the moment because the vast majority of people are like these people in Barnsley. Vox popped, as they were, in Barnsley, in Yorkshire, South Yorkshire, which is going into Tier 3 restrictions as well. Vox popped by LBC Radio. This is the nation in a nutshell. It's not good.
I think it's a good thing. I know it's going to be a bit pain in bum-like, but we're all going to have to put up with it. We're going to have to wear our masks, stay indoors, keep us distance, do what we've got to do, because otherwise, coming into sort of winter time and what have you, it's going to get even worse, because this virus is even more active in colder climates. So if we don't buckle down hatches and what have you, it's only going to get worse.
Well, we expected it. We knew it would come in. And they've got to do it. They've got to control virus, you know, they've got to get it down, haven't they?
I think it probably is the right move. It will stop me coming into Barnsley because I'm coming from outside the area.
It'll stop me coming into Barnsley. It's the right move to put us in Tier 3. It'll stop me coming into town. I love this.
And I usually come to the Parkway Cinema every Wednesday. So even if the cinema stays open, the suggested restriction on coming into the area will make it impossible.
This is the reason we're screwed. Just listen to the first guy again.
I think it's a good thing. I know it's going to be a bit pain in bum-like.
It's going to be a bit pain in bum-like, but it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
But we're all going to have to put up with it. We're going to have to wear
it. We'll have to put up with it. We'll have to wear the mask. These people, and I'm going to tell you why we're fucked at the moment. Excuse my French. We're fucked at the moment because these people watch television shows like Gogglebox. They actually watch a show that shows people watching television shows. Yes, watching people watching TV on your TV. This is the nation. And I imagine dinner parties at Buckingham Palace or at one of the Rothschild castles, they must be laughing their arses off. over dinner every night at how compliant and obedient people are. It's astonishing. But that's the nation. These are the people I meet in Salford and in Manchester. I stopped a couple of guys randomly the other morning, honestly, just to see, just to get a flavour. Again, it had been a while since I'd done it. Lads, what do you think? Do you think this is necessary? Oh, yeah. Oh, aye. Oh, aye. I mean, Jesus wept. What do you mean, oh, aye? That's the be-all and the end-all of it. At the moment, Gogglebox, laughing their arses off. Angela Rayner, Labour's deputy leader, is, well, she's from up round these parts. Bit of a spat today at Westminster. She was leading a debate on whether there should be a national approach to COVID that everyone follows and whether we should do away with regional measures, right? That was the debate. Should we make measures national and stop all this local stuff? Chris Clarkson was on his feet. He's a Conservative Party MP. He was criticising Angela Rayner. And, well, it all just kicked off then.
Today's last-minute debate has all the hallmarks of the same opportunism that's done so much damage over the past few days. No doubt with a carefully calculated vote at the end designed for release on social media afterwards. I implore members opposite to park the opportunism. I know the Honourable Member for Stretford and Urbs thinks this is a good crisis which the Labour Party should exploit. And I know she speaks for a lot of her frontbench colleagues when she says that. You just need to see it in the support, U-turn, oppose approach that's characterised their hindsight-heavy behaviour. But, excuse me, did the Honourable Lady just call me scum?
Order! 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 Order!
Jesus, I wouldn't get on the wrong side of her. That's the Deputy Speaker there screaming.
From the front bench, we will not have remarks like that. Not under any circumstances, no matter how heartfelt it might be. Not at all.
Jesus Christ, she's angry, huh?
Point of order, Madam Deputy Speaker.
Point of order.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I think one of the things I'd ask you a guidance on is the Honourable Member saying things about the front bench which is inaccurate in their speech, and I'd ask them to withdraw it.
It's not for the Chair to decide what is accurate or inaccurate. I cannot make such a judgment, but of course I will ask the Honourable Gentleman to be reasonable in what he says and to be careful of his remarks. And I'm sure that if the Honourable Gentleman feels that he has said anything that is offensive to the Honourable Lady, then he will undoubtedly withdraw and apologise immediately.
Well, back to Chris Clarkson.
I should clarify, I asked the Honourable Lady if she called me that. That's what I heard.
I asked the Honourable Lady if she called me scum. That's what I heard. Well then, I sent the clip to the lab. I did, and I amplified it. Here's the proof.
Characterise their hindsight-heavy behaviour. But, excuse me, did the Honourable Lady just call me scum?
Think she might have done. That's it, right there. Scum. She definitely said scum. What's the big deal anyway? They're all scum, aren't they? Just ask Ben. Ben, Westminster, what do you think?
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, absolutely right. Professor John Bell from Oxford University is the leading immunologist, apparently. He was on media today talking about the vaccine. Yes, with Emma Barnett. Emma Barnett, BBC Radio 5 Live. John Bell, leading immunologist, Oxford Uni. Think the guy might be Canadian. He might be. Here he is with Barnett.
When will there be a vaccine?
Well, of course, that is entirely dependent on the outcome of what are a large number of trials going on at the moment. But I think we should, possibly by the end of the year, but certainly in the first quarter of next year, have a pretty good idea about how effective and safe those vaccines are.
Have an idea of how safe they are. Does that mean they could then be used in short order, or would it take much longer?
No, I think you'll find that a number of these vaccines are being produced at risk at the moment. So there should be supplies of vaccines to roll out if they prove to be efficacious and safe in their clinical trials.
What role is the UK playing in the development?
Well, the UK's actually, this is one of the domains where the UK's had a really impressive role. It was really the first country to get really organized, and through the Vaccine Task Force was very active in trying to engage the companies that had vaccines in late stage development, and I think has made it easy for those companies to do clinical trials in the UK. So a large number of people have volunteered to participate in clinical trials. but has also orchestrated a plan to purchase those vaccines in anticipation of good data from their trials. So we're actually in quite good shape in the vaccine space, in addition to having our own vaccine, which is the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, which was really the first into late stage studies and will be one of the first to report.
John Bell, we'll hear more from him in a minute. He mentioned the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine. Does Barnett mention that it had to be paused because somebody became very ill? She does, but not quite the way she should do. We'll come back to that in a minute. You did catch this bit, didn't you?
No, I think you'll find that a number of these vaccines are being produced at risk at the moment.
At risk. We will have them in short order, he said to Emma Barnett, because a number of them are being produced at risk. What he means by that is, and we know this to be true, this isn't conjecture, this isn't my opinion. We know that what he means by that is that the companies are going to be indemnified in this country. There is no chance that if you take one of these short order vaccines and it happens to have some adverse effect in you, you have not got a snowball's chance in hell of getting any recompense, of getting any compensation. That's what he means. Producing them at risk, he says. Right? Right, okay. I mentioned that Barnett then says to him briefly the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine trial had to be paused. She doesn't get into any detail, but she does mention it.
But that was the one that had to be paused, is that right?
It was paused, yeah. It was paused for 3 or 4 days, yeah.
And how is that now? Is it back on track?
How is that now, says Barnett? This is how woeful the media is. Obviously, the question was, and even though you, and I don't know everything about you, but I assume you've never presented a live radio show in your life. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. I think you probably haven't. Even you, with no training whatsoever, would have asked the question, how's the volunteer doing? No. Not the media, not at all. God, no, don't ask the obvious question.
Yeah, it was paused for 3 or 4 days, yeah.
And how is that now? Is it back on track?
Back. Wretched presenter. He's stuttering and stammering. He doesn't know if she's going to ask about the volunteer or not.
The pivotal trial, which is being run in the UK and in Brazil and in South Africa.
In Brazil and South Africa, which is where most volunteers are based. What the pharmaceutical companies have been doing forever, it's one of the most disgusting, putrid, obnoxious things you could ever do. They trial their medicines, not just vaccines, in some of the poorest places in the world. They go to the, forgive my pronunciation, my Portuguese is diabolical, the favelas, right? They go to the favelas, they go to shanty towns in South Africa, and for a pittance, they get men and women who've not got a pot to piss in to take their experimental drugs. That's what they do. And that's what they are doing.
Has been back in full flight for a couple of weeks now.
Would you take an early vaccine yourself?
Wait for the lie.
Yeah.
Of course he would.
For sure.
Oi, I believe you.
You wouldn't have any nervousness around that?
Yeah, none whatsoever, actually. I mean, the world of vaccines has been very good about making...
Very good. Of course, the next thing Barnett should say to him, and it would have happened back in the day when we had real presenters, Barnett would have said, well, then there's a lot of nervousness around the vaccine, Professor Bell. Why don't you come and have the vaccine? We'll get one, and you come into studio when it's available. And because everything is filmed now, radio's gone. There is no radio anymore. All of these radio shows are filmed and they're streamed live on Twitter. So I would say to him, come in then and we'll observe you taking it. We'll get it for you. Don't bring your own one. We'll get it so that you can take it to demonstrate your confidence in it, in its safety and in its efficacy. That's what you would say to him, right? Not Emma, though.
Making sure that they understand safety risks if they exist and try and attempt to make these vaccines absolutely safe, because they're going into people who are fit and well. It's not like many drugs where if you're treating people with late stage cancer, you know, they've already got a disease. And so you can take a wider confidence interval on safety issues, but you can't really do that with vaccines.
Yeah, you got that bit, didn't you? You got that bit.
Because they're going into people who are fit and well.
Right?
Because they're going into people who are fit and well.
They're going into people who are fit and well, but not for very long. Not for very long. Barnett, of course, wretched as she is, deplorable, never mentioned the fact that swine flu gave many, many, many people narcolepsy. Swine flu vaccine, 10 years ago. Right? You are compelled as a presenter to bring that up. And you know what else you're compelled to bring up? You're compelled to bring up horror stories coming out of Korea that several people have died after getting a flu vaccine there. Would you believe it? As reported by the Daily Mail today, and Barnett's production team would have known that. So, with the world's leading immunologist screaming for fast vaccines that are produced at risk, it is incumbent upon you as the presenter to say, listen, are you aware of those stories coming out of Korea about people dropping dead after taking a flu vaccine? No. But we know why. Here's Emma Barnett on her own programme only 4 weeks ago.
It's a rare example on the BBC where we're allowed to just, you know, say that the person who's saying the anti-vax message is wrong. You know, we're allowed to say that because of the science. Do you see what I'm saying?
And?
We actually don't, as a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong. We actually don't do that.
Whether they're right or wrong, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers. Anti-vaxxers today have never had a day like today. I don't know what I'd describe myself as. I don't need a vaccine for anything. I'm 6 foot six, eyes of blue, eyes of green, eyes of brown. I don't know what colour my bloody eyes are. I'm a big old baldy gal. I'm very, 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 very healthy. I don't need a vaccine. So I wouldn't take one. It doesn't make me anti-vaccine. I also wouldn't take one because I don't trust the pharmaceutical companies that make them. I wouldn't trust them to tell me the time in a room full of clocks, as David Icke famously says from time to time. And vaccines are hurting people all over the world. Gardasil, destroying the lives of tens of thousands, maybe more, young women. So I wouldn't have one based on that. Great day for people who've been screaming about the dangers of having vaccines, as the flu vaccine is killing people in Korea. And the national media in Korea says it might be more than just a few people who have died after getting a flu vax there. Can you imagine it? But Emma didn't think it was worth bringing up, you know. Wouldn't you love to have just one go, just one chance, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you love to take over one of these programmes? Just for one day, 2 hours, eh? Wouldn't it be fan-dabby-dozy, wouldn't it? Lots more we could get into in the monologue, but I want to get my guests on. I'm going to be speaking in a couple of moments' time with Darren Nesbitt, the man behind The Light, which is a brand new newspaper. And thanks to my friend Dave Collins. How you doing, Dave? I've got it here. It's lovely. It smells like a newspaper. It looks like a newspaper. The type, the print is clear. The photographs are clear. It's desktop publishing at its best. It looks lovely. And the articles inside are very, very interesting and well written as well. Darren Nesbitt in a moment after this from Led Zeppelin on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Happy birthday to Mark Bajerski. And congratulations to Nico and family on the birth of the baby boy. Love that. Great news, eh? MarkBajerski.com. That's the one. Jesus, Richie. Great guy. Led Zeppelin on your Richie Allen Radio Show. 29 minutes past the hour. It is a Wednesday's program on October 21st. Somebody's put a spell on me. Somebody's got a voodoo doll somewhere and they're messing with the throat segment of it. Stuttering today. I don't know what's going on. Listen, welcome back. Keep the tweets coming in. John Paul Jones is a base god. I agree with that, Alan. I agree with that. Very excited to welcome to the programme the man who's founded this brand new newspaper called The Light, a truth paper. It's a free paper and it is being distributed around the country. 20,000 issues were printed off and distributed, the first edition in September, and 50,000 and counting the second edition. It is very impressive. It really is. Let's welcome to the programme the man behind it, Darren Nesbitt. Hey, Darren, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Richie. How are you doing? Sorry, I was just taking my hazmat suit off.
No worries, mate. Good to have you on the programme. This is kind of funny, this. This is kind of funny because you've kind of stuck one on me. About 4 or 5 weeks ago, somebody shared a video of a man playing a guitar when I was doing this programme. And the man was singing something along the lines of, you can stick your poison vaccines up your arse. And I said on my radio show with my big mouth on me, that's all very good, but that's not going to put the wind up the people behind the pandemic. It's going to take a bit more than that. Of course, it turned out that you were the guy playing the guitar and singing, and you only went and launched a newspaper. So that kind of told me, Darren, if you know what I mean. Congratulations, mate. How you doing? Tell us about the paper. When did you get the idea for it? And how did you go about putting it together?
It came about a few months ago, just in conversation. We started with flyers, obviously seeing what's going on with you know, we've been aware of the New World Order and everything. That's their plans for world domination and the enslavement of all of mankind for obviously a number of years. That song that you mentioned, yeah, quite an infamous song now. It was written back in 2013. But obviously we're now seeing it, you know, really come to fruition. You know, with things like the Coronavirus Act 2020, which the UK government passed back in March. And there was just a sense of urgency to raise awareness of that. So it started out with, well, let's do some flyers, and we crowdfunded 60,000 flyers, and they went out, and just seeing the enthusiastic response to that. And also realizing that social media is great for connecting. Social media is great for organizing events and what have you, and obviously sharing information that's really going on. But in terms of actually raising awareness, we're stuck in a sandbox. It's not reaching the mainstream people. You know, you can see that everybody, you know, it's great to be online, you're sharing information and you know, everybody's like, you know, everybody agrees and all the rest of it. Then you go to the supermarket and you're the only person not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
So it's a great big, you know, it's a great big realization that sitting in front of your screen is not going to do it. We have to go out in our local communities, as well as doing rallies and protests and marches and all the rest of it in events. You know, we need literature to hand out to people as well. So it kind of developed from there. You know, obviously, again, with our social media networks.
You make a good point, too, about social media. Companies can tweak their own, we say algorithms, of course, but you might have tens of thousands of people following you. But the social media companies fix it so that the people likely to be shown, you know, down your way, for want of a better way of putting it, are people who are already interested in these subjects anyway. It very carefully prevents maybe people on the fence from finding it. So it's a very good point. But going from flyers to producing the newspaper and getting it distributed, as you have done, 20,000 plus copies September and 50,000. And I've seen some extraordinary photographs on Twitter of vans full of the papers and volunteers posting them through letterboxes. I'm not joking or flattering you when I say I am incredibly impressed by that. Logistically, how have you managed to do it?
That was the first thing. That was the first hurdle, I thought. If there is the enthusiasm to create that network for, you know, for activists to go out and do that, to, you know, relay the papers, because there's no way we could use the regular distribution networks, you know, that supply the news agents. I mean, they might take it, but obviously, we we're doing things on a shoestring, i.e. virtually for free, but voluntarily. It's all run by donations, et cetera, et cetera. So what I wanted to see first was there the enthusiasm to set this distribution network up? And within a couple of weeks, there were 300 volunteers. So that told me, yeah, let's move forward with that. And then it was a case of, obviously, what do we want the paper to look like? I mean, I did a mock-up. I think the first thing I did was a mock-up of the light, just the front page. When we did the first Trafalgar Square, the first major big Trafalgar Square rally, back on the 26th of August. And there were, obviously there were 40,000 people there, and it was an immense event. And obviously completely underreported and misreported by the paper. I don't know which paper said, but there were hundreds there, and that riled me up just as much as everybody else. So we did the mock-up, and again, it was fantastically received. So it's a case of, okay, let's move forward with it. I have no experience in newspapers or any of that. And I keep saying to people, listen, if I'd actually written it down as a business plan and gone, you know, this is what it needs to do and this is how much it's going to cost and this is how much work is going to be involved, all the rest of it, I'd never have done it.
Yeah.
I was just motivated and urged to do it. Like I say, because of the enthusiastic response of all the volunteers, of everybody that's involved. And it's still just blowing up exponentially.
It's great sometimes to do something where you don't have a lot of experience and you don't know the potential pitfalls. It's often a help rather than a hindrance. Darren Nesbitt is my guest this hour, and I'm holding in my hands the October edition. I've got both editions of The Light, a truth paper, and it is beautifully printed and it looks great. It really does. We had a free paper delivered in my city of Waterford all of my life. And the thing about free papers, I guarantee this, I know a little bit about this because I used to speak to the publishers of it. They are read. When you post those through the letterbox of people's homes, they are read. There's even a Salford one which comes around. And it's mostly mainstream stuff to do with the local borough and stuff like that. Wouldn't interest me a great deal. But I do look at it, Darren. I do read it. So I just think it's fantastic that you're getting this into people's letterboxes. And I know it's only been two issues, but have you been hearing from people, from your readers? I mean, at this stage, have you gotten any feedback from people who came into their hall or came into their porch and found The Light? Has anybody been in touch with you to say, oh, wow, thanks for that?
Dozens and dozens, and nearly every one of them wants to get involved, whether it's to subscribe, whether it's to distribute, whether it's to write articles, to, you know, whatever, in any way to get involved. I've had one negative out of, 70,000, one negative feedback so far, and that's it, which is just, again, you know, madly surprising. But just to let you know, I mean, our focus at this stage is to get it into businesses and shops. I mean, obviously, you know, it's going in some doors, but what we're really trying to do is get it into pubs and cafes, laundrettes, you know, it's in train stations, on trains, all that kind of thing, so that, you know, a dozen people could read each issue, you know. So if we're printing 50,000, but there could be 500,000 readers of that October issue eventually, because, you know, again, we're encouraging people to read it and then pass it on, and that will actually be printed from the next issue as well in the paper itself.
And it's packed. I mean, just holding October's edition now, you've got stories about the links between the Gates Foundation and DARPA and their plans for nanochips for vaccines. And there are great references in these articles, you know, to support the central claims in those articles. You've got the articles about children being taught, or not taught, but asked to report any right-wing sentiment at home. You've got coverage of the Trafalgar Square rally, great photographs as well, clear and sharp. And, you know, I was surprised, because when Dave Collins said, I'll send it to you, Richie, I was like, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. But I didn't hold out, you know, I won't say I didn't hold out any hope. I didn't expect it to be as good as it is. It's very, very good. And, you know, I can't find too much fault with, any fault really, with the articles. You know, there aren't any wild claims being made. Like I said, when within the stories, the supporting data and links are there as well. I'm very impressed with that. Is that something now that you, Darren, want to be very careful about? Do you want to watch that very closely? You want to make sure that what goes into that paper can't be challenged anyway, not on a factual level. You got to be careful about that, I would imagine.
100%. It's absolutely vital, because, you know, if we're saying the mainstream media are skewing the truth or they're not reporting the truth, and we come along and say, look, we're a paper that's, we're a truth paper rather than a newspaper, then we have to obviously be held up to that very, very high standard. And that's how we'll succeed, and that's how people will, you know, more and more people will start to take it seriously. It's great to get, you know, it's this, because it's the news and stories that we get to know about within those social media circles, but are obviously, you know, completely fenced off from the rest of the population. So, you know, as you pointed out, the actual appearance of the paper is important. It needs to look like a professional, you know, real newspaper, if you like. And then the actual content has to be You know, so somebody reads those, what I want is somebody to read those stories and go, really, they passed that legislation? That's happened? Let me go and check online. And they go and check online and they find out it's true, you know, and that is a win for us. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about opening eyes and awakening minds to what's really going on. Because the mainstream are never, ever going to. I mean, the mainstream are a propaganda tool of the owners of the world who want to lock us all down forever in the digital slavery. So it's absolutely important that we keep those standards really, really high. And I'm not saying we're going to succeed 100% of the time, but if we can have 99.98%. That would be a pretty good standard to keep to.
Well, of course it would. And going forward, if you ever printed anything that you later found out to be inaccurate, well, you just post, you print following issue. Look, we thought this and we got it wrong. Darren Nesbitt is our guest. Go to thelightpaper.co.uk. Ewan Cooper has tweeted, I think he's in the Southwest, and a lot of people are tweeting similar tweets. I want to get a copy of it. I want to get my hands on it. How do I do that? Now, it's only edition two, the October edition. You're looking for people to help with distribution, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. We've already got a great network. So if nobody else comes on board, you know, that's fine. But I'll be honest with you, Richie, our goal, and it's my pie in the sky, but our goal is to be doing one day a million copies a week, in which case it will obviously be going into people's letterboxes, to seriously truth bomb the country. And to get there from here, obviously, we're going to need thousands of distributors, right down to, really local postcodes and what have you. So absolutely, we're looking for distributors. And again, there's we've got a Facebook group, and I need to put a link on the website, the Light Distribution Hub. But obviously, you can get in touch with us through the website. We're looking for if you want to subscribe and get hold of a copy, it's thelightpaper.co.uk, and there's a subscribe button on there. It's a PayPal repeating subscription. Obviously, people are supporting future issues by doing that. And we'll send you one out by post. We'll send you each issue out by post.
That's brilliant. Again, a number of people are saying that they have seen it on Twitter and they're delighted with it, but I'm aware of the fact that most people listening now, particularly overseas as well, they won't have seen it. And I just want to say again, and I have no reason to say this other than it's the truth, the paper looks terrific, it really does, and the articles inside it are well written and concise, and it's a gift, really. Darren Nesbitt, the man behind The Light, a truth paper, thelightpaper.co.uk. Get on there. We have this virus where the survival rate for it is somewhere around 99.8%. The average age of somebody who dies with it, not of it, but with it, is somewhere around 82 and a half years old. It doesn't touch or brush children, really. And yet, here we are in the northwest of the country on Thursday night going into Tier 3 lockdown. Sky News today, Darren, had women... Several women who run different businesses were in tears. I got choked up watching it. I'm not prone to getting choked up, but I found it very difficult to watch. Mm. And it just steamrollers on, doesn't it? I know you've been very active on the independent media scene for a long time, and I know you're well known, but did you see this coming, Darren, in 2020? I can't say that I did. I'd be lying. Did you see something like this landing this year?
No, I'll be honest. No, but somebody sent me a link today from the WHO. It's the IHR. It's from 2005, and it lays out surveillance at airports, all countries coming together to fight a pandemic. So if we'd been looking and various other things as well, which will scare the hell out of everybody, because it's been planned for ages. I mean, people are aware of the 2010 Rockefeller lockstep. Yeah. Obviously, they were event 201 from last year. I mean, we're in the middle of a live exercise, Richie. All your listeners know that. But again, it's getting it out to the general population. But it seems that facts and evidence aren't enough either. We need to, you know, they seem to have been indoctrinated into a religion. It's like the COVID religion. So I suppose in one way, you know, where we expected people to be fooled, but we thought it was going to be more of the digital dystopia, the cashless society, the shiny new world that they were going to create. I mean, and obviously that is still their plan. Under the guise of the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution, but I'll be honest, in it came about the turn of the year, and I saw the videos of the people in China falling over, and it was just so falling over in the street, and it was just so obviously a hoax. I just thought it was going to blow over just like the swine flu, the MERS. Because they've tried this a few times. They've tried this pandemic a few times, but obviously this time has been different. They've obviously waited till the right time.
Now that's an interesting point. Let's stay with this for a moment, because I hadn't considered this. Not because I'm naive, I just didn't consider it, but I think you might be onto something. So maybe back in 2009, 2010, maybe they wanted to do this then, but screwed it up or realised it was the wrong time. That's not a bad shout, Darren, if that's what you're thinking.
Yeah, you know what, potentially, and that leads on to an even bigger point. These people are not as powerful as they make out to be, and we shouldn't be afraid of standing up to them. We shouldn't be afraid of it's all done, you know, it's a done deal, because they're not really as powerful. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if they want to take over the world, why not do it yesterday or the day before? You know what I mean? So that they're not as powerful as they make out. They're not run by Satan or aliens. They are ordinary men and women with an evil plan. They're very, very good at what they do. But it's hard to fight a war when most of your side don't even realise they're in a battle.
Yeah, because they watch Gogglebox, Darren. And I don't mean to be rude about people. I love the people who live around me. I do. I value them. They're just as important as me and as everybody else. But they do get their news exclusively from television, and they do watch television programs like Gogglebox. We've lost the ability to have a look at ourselves and our habits and question ourselves and analyse ourselves. You know, I got a laugh out of a guy in a park recently talking about Gogglebox, and I said, "Do you watch it?" And he laughed and he said, "I do." And then he laughed again and he went, "Why do I watch that?" And I said, "Well, only you have the answer, you know. You must know yourself. It can't be doing you any good. And it's not helping you with your critical thinking skills." But that's where people are. You seem to have a lovely approach to people who, you said, they're on the same side, but they don't know they're in a war. You don't see people as the enemy. You see them as your friends and your neighbours that need a little nudge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that should be the approach we take, because the other main thrust of doing this, obviously, is to get the real news out, the information out that either the mainstream are they keep it hidden from the people, like the legislation the government are passing and all the rest of it. But it's also to build local community. You know, again, activists, we've all got lots of friends all over the world online. It feels really good to connect. But, you know, if it came down to, let's organise a little local rally in your local area. It's like, I don't know anybody in my area that's actually awake. Again, you know, you go to the supermarket, you're the only person not wearing a mask. So the other point of distributing it the way we're doing it was to help build those local connections. And they will build up and build up, obviously, as the distribution network, grows. So, again, that will help, because it's a conversation. I was in Manchester a rally on Saturday, and we're at the top of Market Street, and you know, the guys were doing the thing with the megaphones, and I turn around to, you know, people on the edge watching, you know, guy with a mask on. So, you know, you don't need to wear a mask, you know, we're all exempt. Really? Well, what do you say if they ask for your proof of exemption? Say, "Well, I don't have to share my private medical information." "Oh, right, okay." And just give them that little bit of confidence and courage. Yeah. And he took the mask off and he walked off, and I know he will be going to a shop without a mask. He will take that little step, because it all it is, you know, we don't need a political party. We don't need to go and storm Parliament. We don't need any of these massive, big, we need a mass uprising or anything like that. We all need to unite and you know, take this big act. But all we need to do is share the exact same attitude and emotional state that we have, which is not one of fear at all. It's one of pure resistance and rebellion and rejection of the criminal mafia that are running things. And non-compliance, you know, we know where we stand with the common law. We know that any fines issued to us because we're not muzzled or because we're in a group of 10 or, you know, or whatever ridiculous regulations, or keeping your business open, as the guys in Liverpool have proved last
brilliant
week,
that,
you know, the gym owners.
Thrilling.
So if everybody shares that attitude, again, it doesn't have to be everybody. Yeah. We get 5%, 10%, 15% of people to say no, you know, just to not comply. That's it. You know, because that will then obviously, you know, that will then mushroom like crazy. But that's all it takes. It's just sharing that attitude, sharing the information that we know. And yes, it might take a little while. We're not going to get that to somebody who's completely fast asleep, who's still arguing that there's a pandemic out there and they completely believe everything on the BBC and all the rest of it. But those people that are half awake, like I say, that the guy in Manchester, the guy's wearing masks, two young lads in Liverpool, right at the end. On Sunday, after the rally on Sunday, and one was wearing a mask, one wasn't. But by the time I finished with them, they both walked away without a mask.
Brilliant.
The young kids, they want to rebel. They were wearing heavy metal t-shirts. So it was like, you know, we want live music back. We want our life back. Let's renormalize. And the way we renormalize is obviously by not complying. And it's counterintuitive to people. It's counterintuitive to those that are asleep right now. They think if we comply, if we keep following the rules, then they'll lift the lockdown, it'll all end. But the actual opposite is true, and that's the message that we need to push out to people, that if you stop complying, then the rules will end. Because they told them that it's just 3 weeks to flatten the curve. Yeah, just a short lockdown and then it's all over. And here we are, over 6 months later, and we're going into a national lockdown again, but they're doing it city by city, you know, so nobody notices.
Yeah. You're right, and Jimmy Cranky just extended it in Scotland by a week, believe it or not. Again, like you'd say to the Scots, wouldn't you? So did you believe Nicola Sturgeon when she said, oh, we'll do this for the next few weeks? Did you actually believe that? And I suppose many of them would probably say, oh, we did. But no, of course, they never come out of them. I think one MP, one Conservative MP, I don't know if it's your man, the 1922 committee, Graham Brady, I'm not sure if it was him, but he's asking the questions about, where in these measures, where's the exit plan? There isn't. And there's a reason there isn't an exit plan, because there isn't meant to be any exit. Darren Nesbitt is our guest. We've got Darren for another few minutes. Let me just remind you, dear listener, this is an exciting development. We're talking about The Light. It's a brand new, real, physical newspaper. And it's very, very good. Second edition is being distributed. 50,000 copies, 20,000 first time out in September. Over 70,000 copies have been handed to people. Cherise has been on Palomine. She's distributing the paper for you. Thanks for that, Cherise. I really appreciate that. And somebody else was on to stick up for Gogglebox. And fair enough. Rupert says, leave Gogglebox alone. We need to have a laugh in this fucked up world. Fair enough. Maybe I was being a snob. Maybe I was being a snob there. So your ambition then, because I did note when you said this to me a few minutes ago, I loved it. I love ambition. You don't sound remotely arrogant to me, not at all. I like that. But I like ambition. You said, I'd love to be able to get a million of these a week to people. That's the ambition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Let's if you're going to do something, let's make a difference. But to be honest with you, Richie, listen, even if it goes to, if we stay at 100,000, you know, even 100,000, because like I say, 10 times as many people will read that. So, you know, yeah, I don't know what Gogglebox is. You've thrown me there.
Oh, no Jesus. Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? It's the worst thing was ever put on our television screens. It is a program where I switched it on now, it's a TV entertainment program. When you switch it on, it's actually about people watching famous television programs. So you are watching people watching television and commenting on it. honest to God, yeah, I know. And I caught the future Mrs. Allen watching it. I don't know, about 3, 4, 5 months ago. And there was an argument. And it didn't end well for me. But yeah, it's garbage. It's beyond garbage. That's how, I said in Buckingham Palace and in the castles of those behind these agendas, they must be laughing their arses off thinking, we've got them watching people watching television on television. That's where we are now. But I don't know. It's by the way, Spiro Skouras, who's a lovely bloke and a great journalist himself, says, great guest, Richie. I look forward to seeing the publications. Well, you can see them online, Spiro. Thelightpaper.co.uk, the PDF version, is on there. It's all lovely and neat. I love that, you know. And I was thinking to myself today, would I dare, even if I had any criticism, would I dare offer it? And I wouldn't, but there is no criticism. No, there isn't. All I would say going forward, because you started off so well, keep those standards. And it's important when people are not used to the independent media, it's important that they read that you contacted the various departments. It's lovely when you read that. So when your writers are writing articles, it's lovely to read, we asked the Minister for Health or we asked the Minister for Defence for comment. And we did. Of course, they're not going to comment. We know that, don't we, Darren? But it's nice to always do that. Listen, I don't need to tell you how to suck eggs. You're doing that anyway. And if you keep that up, mate, it's, you know, the sky's the limit, really. And what I would say, if you have a business and you need some advertising, and I'm not going to say cheap advertising, I'm not going to say anything like that at all, but if you need some advertising at rates which I presume will be more favourable than the rates you might be charged in regional or national newspapers, with the distribution numbers that Darren Nesbitt and his volunteers and his colleagues are reaching, I think it'd be crazy if you had something to advertise, you'd be crazy not to contact thelightpaper.co.uk and find out. I'm going to take an ad out for the radio show because I want to support this because I think it's brilliant and I think it's worth supporting. So I'm going to take an ad out with you for the November or December issue, whichever one we want to do. And I'll be delighted to do that. And I'm really impressed, Darren, you know. And do you know what's funny? When I was I wasn't criticising you and the song. I was just, at the time, I was a bit grumpy. I was saying, you know, we need to do a bit more than gather in squares. And I'm a big supporter of rallies. Oh, geez, of course I am. But I've always worried about people going there, meeting Darren Nesbitt, meeting Piers Corbyn, and then going home feeling a bit refreshed, thinking, oh, thank God there's people out there doing stuff. And then they get back and they do sod all. That's all I've ever said, really. But it's a turn up for the book that made me laugh when I saw that you were behind the light paper. I thought, Jesus whipped, this is the guy I've been taking, not taking the piss out of you, but I've been saying we need to do more than sing songs, and he's just launched a newspaper. I'm really impressed, mate. It's great stuff.
I couldn't agree more. People power is the only thing that's going to work, and people need to realize that it's not going to be, you know, Piers Corbyn or Darren or anybody, you know, any other. Yeah. It's all of us together. It's everybody. Everybody's the hero in this story. I've made the, I think I wrote it in the, on the front page of the October issue that, you know, normally we're so used to seeing on the screen the you know, the big bad Bond villains who want to take over the world. But, you know, the superhero always comes in, or the Arnie guy, you know, the hero of the film always comes in and saves the day. And we're so used to being brainwashed and conditioned to that people have to realize that it's the audience themselves that are going to save the day. You know, this is a paper written by the people, for the people, distributed by the people. And, you know, like I said, rallies are great. And we should get motivated from them. And we should get information and ideas. And it's great to meet people and get that lift. Then take it back to your local community. And again, you know, the light is there for, it's a tool. So you can, so we can use that. But it's everybody standing up to everybody. I mean, I think there's about 1-2% of people already awake in this country. If we get that to, like I say, 10%, like 1 in 10 people are now fully awake. But we're not just fully, you're not just, I don't agree with it. An activist is worth 10 of a sleeper or 100 of a sleeper, because we're actually there. We'll talk to people. We'll explain why we've not got a mask on. We'll explain why we shouldn't be following the rules, because they're not going to end. You know, we're far more vocal, and you know, and that's why they're far more afraid of us. You know, it's not about violence. It's not about, you know, like I say, forming a new political party and using any of their process at all. Yeah, it's about having conversations, 1-on-1, 1-on-5, 1-on-10, whatever it is. You know, people power will win the day, and that's where, you know, that's where the paper is you know, is focused at as well. And I really hope we can continue with those standards that we've set. If it's got anything to do with me, we will do. And just before you kick me off, I would like to say hi and thank you to Ian and Matt and Kath. And who else is and everybody else who's really helped us get this together, everybody that's contributed, Karen and Andy and you know, everybody, obviously all the distributors, all the article writers as well. I there's no way you could do this on my own, but it's just gathered the right team as well, so it's felt right from the first issue. It's taken on a life of its own, Richie, and it's very exciting. As you can hear, you're excited about it, people are excited about it, because it's a real world truth paper. Here's the other thing: they can't damn well censor it like they can online.
Well, congratulations on it, and I wish you nothing but the best going forward. thelightpaper.co.uk, and real soon, folks, you might be seeing a hard copy of it in a town or a village or a city near you. At the rate they're going, it won't be too long. So again, thelightpaper.co.uk. Darren, thanks for coming on and sharing your time with us today, mate. I really enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you.
It's been an honour, a privilege and a pleasure. Thank you very much, Richie. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Darren. Great guy, eh? Darren Nesbitt, what a top man. And The Light Paper is on Twitter as well, so give it a follow on Twitter. And it's one of Darren's mates running the Twitter account, as far as I understand. Give it a shout. Check it out, I should say, there on Twitter. I've got it here. Honestly, I'm very impressed now. And it takes a bit to impress me. It really does. But 50,000 copies of the October edition have been basically distributed. And you can see, I've tweeted out I've retweeted some photographs of the vans with the big bundles of copies there. This is a good development. I'm delighted. Plenty of stuff to be negative about. This is something to be really positive about. Thanks to Patricia in Zurich, my pal Patricia Braunschweiler. Thanks for your comment, Patricia. It's a great idea. Free papers are excellent, and it'll need to be supported by advertisers. With the distribution numbers, like I said, if you've got a product and you want it to be advertised, you do worse now than going to thelightpaper.co.uk and checking that out. Right, we're going to have headlines from FSN, is what we're going to do. It is Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, here in Lancashire. If I say Greater Manchester again, somebody will stone me in Salford. Here we are, headlines from FSN.
From Feature Story News in New York, I'm William Denslow. The shooting of protesters in Nigeria has sparked further unrest in the country's biggest city, Lagos. The United Nations has condemned this week's deadly violence. Pope Francis has expressed support for same-sex couples to have civil unions. And new public health guidelines are being rolled out in parts of Europe and the United States in a bid to contain the latest surge in COVID-19 cases.
There you are now, Pope Francis. That's a turn-up for the books, isn't it? Pope Francis there. And gay marriage, civil unions. Lovely. Don't forget, Zed Phoenix joins the programme right soon. He'll be with me in a couple of minutes' time after this.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Lovely. Welcome back to the Richie Allen Radio Show. Wednesday, tomorrow, Stephen Lendman. I love Stephen Lendman. You have no idea. Great, great journalist. Live from the Windy City, Chicago, tomorrow. And after him, John Waters, another brilliant journalist, live on the line from Ballya Ochlair from Dublin. John Waters, Stephen Lenman. So it's a packed old show tomorrow. Yeah, what are we going to do now? We've got Mary Wells lined up. Oh, yeah. Like a bit of Motown, don't we? We do. This is Mary Wells, then. Zed Phoenix is standing by. Don't want to miss him, do you? That is Mary Wells. Yes, indeed it is. On the Richie Allen Radio Show. Song's called My Guy. Great tune. Let's welcome back to the show. Delighted to welcome him back. He came on the programme at the very outset of this madness, and he did an absolutely outstanding job of investigating the members of the UK SAGE committee. That's the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies. It's about 30 or thereabouts academics and scientists who advise the government. And my guest did a wonderful job of investigating those people and demonstrating very clearly, very forensically, these people's links to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations. Great stuff. He's an investigative journalist. He's a social media content creator. He's got a very, very good YouTube channel. And he's also the man, I think we talked about this as well before, behind govote.org.uk. Lovely to welcome back to the show, Zed Phoenix. Hey, Zed, welcome back. How are you?
No, I'm good, Richie. How are you?
I'm, you know, all things considered, mate, I'm not too shabby at all. It's great to have you back on the programme. Hey, listen, before we talk about what's been happening this week and where things are going, fascinating to read an article in the Telegraph newspaper today with the headline, "I'm almost starting to think this whole pandemic really is a conspiracy." An article that was written by a journalist called Annabel Fenwick Elliott, one of their senior content editors. She lays out why the whole thing is basically a scam. And at the end, she mentions that you can say conspiracy loonies if you want, but, you know, maybe what the conspiracy theorists have been saying is not really too far away from our current warped reality. That's in the Telegraph. Things are hotting up, really. I think we shouldn't maybe be too surprised that senior journalists who've been around the block 100 times are starting to see through this, Zed. Does that give you cause for optimism?
Oh, it does. Absolutely, Richie. I mean, there's a lot of things that give me cause for optimism, and that is one of them. I did read that article as well this morning. And I think what's great about this whole thing, really, is that it's falling apart. And it's falling apart at the seams. And I think it was derailed straight away as soon as we went into lockdown. So many people came out. I came out with information. Other people came out with information. And whilst we were called conspiracy theorists and loonies, I mean, I didn't particularly think that we were talking conspiracy theories at the time. People thought that. And of course, we've been proven correct every single step of the way. We have seen this. We are now sort of in the future of this now. We know where it's going. We know what they're doing. And we're derailing these ideas every single day. And we are gaining headway. And that's got to be celebrated, surely.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. And maybe there is a bit of panic in the ranks of those who are pushing it. Because, again, infamous Chris Bryant, the Labour MP, speaking to Dan Wooten on Talk Radio, confronted by some basic facts by Dan Wooten that there are scientists who reckon lockdown is very silly. Bryant lost his temper and he called the presenter a nutcase and called him dangerous. That's a good sign that they're on the ropes.
That's a great sign. Yeah, and we've seen this in the past, you know, especially, you know, back in 2012 when I came out about the, you know, the paedophiles in the entertainment industry and Westminster and et cetera. You know, all that was going on then, and people like Bill Maloney were coming out and jumping on BBC television, you know, unexpectedly and all that kind of stuff. You know, we do see this a lot. And this is what happens when things start to fall apart for them. And we've had some great successes over the past sort of couple of months with people coming together and doing things, and more and more are starting to happen. You know, we've got the Truth newspaper, which is I think is onto its second edition now.
Yeah.
Which is a really great thing, and that's a real world newspaper that has to be celebrated, and because that's what we need to start doing now. We've started to get out into the real world. We're starting to influence people. I speak to people every day. People aren't buying what the government is selling, and that's great news.
It is. Just spoke to the editor of The Truth, and I'm just as excited about that as you are. That being said, they're still pushing ahead with with the agenda, and you've been talking about something that we've seen in Birmingham recently, and before it happened in Birmingham, to be fair to you, you had mooted it as a strong probability that they were going to get the army, the Air Force, the army or the military to get involved in testing people and in administering vaccines. We saw this in Birmingham a couple of weeks ago, and you reckon that one of the plans for vaccine distribution is to use supermarkets, Zed, to catch people basically going through supermarkets and to say to them, hey, listen, have you thought about having your COVID vaccine? Tell us more about that.
Well, this came at a sort of out of left field for me, really. Yes, back in the beginning of lockdown, we did hear that the military were going to be brought in and used. However, that didn't happen. And I think it was for testing of people. And essentially, it didn't happen because there was a run on loo roll, surprisingly enough. And this is what I learned just a couple of days ago, that there's so many people packing supermarkets out. Actually, the military couldn't get in there to set up their test centres and what have you to help then. So they had to rethink it. Don't forget, the military go through plans for all sorts of scenarios all the time. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. It just means that this is what they plan for. So I think we have to be cautious when we talk about, you know, especially around about vaccines.
Yeah.
People are very sensitive about this issue. We know that when I came out and we did the Control of Disease Act and said, could they then use that to mandatory vaccinate people, that people went up in arms about that. We had judges come out and say, actually, no, they can't do mandatory vaccinations because they'd have to have more legislation. Then Matt Hancock came back and responded to us and said, we're not going to bother with mandatory vaccinations because we think we've built the market up. So we've got to be cautious when we talk about these things. And I think, you know, we take it with a pinch of salt, but I think it's worth reporting on. And so I was at a dinner and I was with a senior army major, and they were talking to somebody else and they were having to have this conversation about the sort of vaccinations, and the people at the dinner party essentially were sort of pro vaccines and stuff. So I kept a bit quiet, and then I started to chip in and said, well, look, you know, how is the army going to plan on helping? And they said they were going to use supermarkets as vaccination stations, or at least that was the sort of working hypothesis. That's a plan that they are planning to, you know, to train on or to think about, you know, so it's not necessarily going to happen. And so, you know, what I sort of wanted to ask and I didn't get around to was, how was that actually going to work? So we know that the military are planning to use supermarkets because essentially it makes sort of sense. We all have to go to a supermarket at some point during the week, you know, to pick up our bits and bobs. So if the vaccine is brought out and it isn't made mandatory, how are you going to get people to take it? Well, you'd set up at a supermarket. So it's kind of logical. How it's set up at a supermarket, whether it's in the entrance or it's just on the side, a bit like, you know, when they do test and screening for breast cancer. Those sort of trucks are on the side, aren't they? You go to the screening centre, which is essentially a lorry, and you go into the back of that and it's got all the equipment in to do the testing. Yeah. And stuff like that. So it may be something like that, or it may be something slightly more sinister. But, you know, I'm asking these questions now and trying to put it out there just as information. And just so, look, you know, let's just be prepared about this. You know, if this is going to happen, this is probably going to happen at supermarkets. The question I think is worth asking, and we won't get an answer to it, I'm sure, is, you know, are we going to be denied access to the supermarket if we haven't been through the vaccine section?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what I kind of want to know at the moment. So that's the information that I sort of put out. And I didn't put it out as this is going to happen. I just put it out as information. And so we're prepared. And I think that's been the important thing for me throughout this whole thing, is being prepared for what's coming. So that it's not a shock, we're not in a state of confusion, and we know how to fight back, and we fight back in the right way and not in a way that's going to make us look bad and bring everything down on us, you know, because we were already, essentially terrorized by what they're doing as a general population. And I think that would be unfair to add to that. So everything that I try and do is just about getting information out there so that people can be prepared.
Yeah, presenting it in a kind of a matter-of-fact way without ever, you know, sounding like a know-it-all is good. And that's how you come across on your YouTube videos. Present it almost as if it's nothing. It isn't nothing. It's very, very sinister and very serious. But if you speak to people in that way, kind of in that throwaway manner, I think it does tend to reach people. Zed Phoenix is our guest, and one of the things, I mean, you touched on there about you might have to have, you make your way through the vaccine centre at the supermarket. I've been watching your videos on YouTube, and we've talked about this before. It now seems inevitable that if they get their way, our lives will transform sometimes next year again, because we will be precluded from certain activities unless we have the passport. Now, you've done a lot of work on this, and the passport will have your details on it, whether you're vaccinated for this or that or the other. And you know, when we first spoke about this months ago, and again, you were on top of this very quickly, before anybody else I knew, you were on top of this, you were studying this. People said this will never happen, but it's gone beyond that now. This is happening. Those passports are ready now to be used, and to be used on people's phones, and it would make things very difficult next year, you know, in terms of going socialising, cinema, what have you, said. So we're nearly there with that, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The one good thing that we've done by getting this out there so early, and I did get a lot of criticism for people saying, well, you know, you've gone a bit early and we've done our legal challenge to the government. Was that too early? Well, actually, what we've done essentially is park a sort of health passport tank outside of Westminster and said, if you make this law, you will find yourself in court pretty quickly. And one of the things that you have to do when you challenge the government is challenge them actually on the law. And you can't do that until they have made it law. So what we're sort of doing at the moment is preventing them from making the health passport law. But what they can do and what they are doing is getting businesses to introduce a health passport scheme. The health passports essentially is an array of different tools that they can use. So it's track and trace. It's all these different apps you get on the phones and stuff like that. In Portugal, they've just introduced it called the Go Away app.
Is that right?
So, yeah, that's right. So, and in Portugal, they didn't think it was ever going to come, and yet it has. So, so this is an array of different things that essentially takes away our civil liberties, freedoms, and democracy. So, we are preventing them at the moment. We're holding that space for them not to make it law, but of course they can bring it into private businesses, like airlines are desperate to have it, and different, you know, restaurants will be desperate to have it. So what this is, this whole idea is of wearing masks is to drive people insane, and so therefore then they will accept the health passport. Well, you don't have to wear a mask, you can just go in, you just use your app and all this kind of stuff. But the one good thing about this is that the uptake for the track and trace program that they've had running has been so low. And I've heard this from several senior people now in Westminster, that it gives them no valuable data whatsoever, which is why they're having to fudge data from, you know, different hospitals. Hospitals are empty, and yet they're having to fudge these things. If the track and trace had actually worked and they had the uptake that they were claiming to have, they would have valuable data, and that's something that they don't have, which sort of brings us on to, I suppose, the solution for all these things. And that's what we're working on right at this moment. And I know I've been a bit quiet over the past couple of months, and that's because I've been extremely busy with what we're doing and trying to see where the solution and the exit for this will be. Because as we know, there is no exit strategy for any of this. And that's important for people to understand. This is here to stay. The COVID-19 pandemic essentially is an excuse to bring about a new change in society. And we are now trying to put together a credible, and I say credible, solution, so that we can at least form an opposition to what's going on and have our voices heard. And that's essentially what Go Vote was all about when we created that 2 years ago.
Before we get into that, I was listening with great interest to BBC Radio 5 yesterday morning, and a young woman who has her own business, a nail and beauty salon, articulate woman, obviously a bright woman, was in tears about the business, maybe the business being wound up. One of the things that she said, which really got me, it staggered me really, was that she wasn't unwell and had never been unwell, but twice she'd been contacted by track and trace and told that she'd been in contact with somebody who had tested positive for coronavirus. Therefore, she had to spend time at home to the detriment of her business. Obviously, I was screaming at the radio, why don't you delete the app off your phone? Why don't you turn off your Bluetooth? I just couldn't believe it. You know, I couldn't believe my ears, that level of compliance. So tell us then about these solutions, because last time you were on, you were talking about potential legal action to try and stop our governments, well, our government here, mandating this type of thing, because ultimately that's what they want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've done a lot of work on that. So, for example, the idea of mandatory vaccinations, we now know they can't do that. We've had essentially the judiciary come back to us with an amazing report that basically says, well, they don't have the powers to do that now. They would have to have a lot more, and I mean a lot more legislation for that to happen. It doesn't mean that they won't do it or go for it in the future. It just means at the moment they can't do that. So it will be voluntary. And it is voluntary as far as it stands today. As far as the health passport goes, again, we're sort of holding that space. So if they do bring it into law, which they've got to do, we are ready and poised to do that. We do need a lot more sort of donations to the legal action. These things are very expensive. And if we lose, I will have to pay the bill. Yeah. Which would be substantial, very much like Simon Dolan is going to have to pay the bill for his legal actions if he ends up losing all his court cases.
He's done well with the crowdfunding, though, I think, Simon. I think Simon has raised a lot of money over
But these costs are substantial, but it's worth doing and it's worth trying. So we're talking about a solution. And one of the solutions that we are planning at the moment is creating what would essentially be an alternative government as a credible opposition. Now, this would be using the Go Vote platform as a political tool, which it is. It's an electoral register, as it were, independent of the system. And we would have votes and we would create positions for to oppose the cabinet, essentially. So there would be an alternative for everybody. And these would be made up of credible people from our society, essentially, who are contacting me at the moment. We're in discussions with some very, very credible, well-known people. And I say well-known in their respective fields.
Yeah.
Who, you know, these aren't celebrities or famous people. You know, it's not like an actor coming up or anything like that. And we're trying to see if this idea has legs, essentially. So that's one of the things that we're putting forward. And of course, we're already getting quite a bit of flack already from the government and what have you for even mooting this idea. Because we're getting support. You know, we've got support from the people of the House of Lords, we've got support from business people, we've got support from people in the House of Commons, and so on and so forth. So this is an idea that I think is going to run, and people seem, to want to do it. The trouble is with the general public, is that the public kind of say, well, we don't want an alternative government. But the thing is, the fact is of this whole thing, is that we're going to have to be governed by something and someone. And when I say someone, I mean an entity of some kind. What GoVote.co.uk does is create direct democracy within our parliamentary democracy field. And that adds on to that. And I think that's a good way of having the people have a voice, which is what we do. We've already changed things in government. We've already made the government do several U-turns over the past couple of months and stuff. So, you know, it has power and it's gaining more power the more people join it. And that's the idea. So we kind of want 3 million people or need 3 million people to join in order for us to have maximum impact. And then if they then decide that the alternative governments is a credible thing that we do want to go forward with, and people decide, because it would have to be on the platform for people to decide who those people were and whether it was a good idea or not, then we would move forward. And we have support from mainstream media people who are keeping very quiet but are mooting, yes, this is a good idea. And so it seems that the world is turning, albeit in a very quiet way. And I quite like that idea. So it is coming together. It's a race. It depends, can we get our things organised and can we get our act together, essentially, faster than they can get their agenda done? And that's really it, if that makes sense.
It makes sense, yeah. What we saw in Liverpool in the last 10 days or so, the gym owner and his refusal to close his gym and his standoff with the police, and then the national media covered that, and they've won the day. And I wonder why more businesses haven't looked at that and thought, you know what, damn it all to hell, we're going to open anyway, because we're not just going to sit twiddling our thumbs while our businesses go bust, bankrupt, whatever. We ain't going to do it. I just can't get my head round, Zed, why more and more businesses haven't come together and said, we're all on the same high street, let's just open up, what can they do? I can't get my head round it. They know they're going bankrupt.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And the reason that I believe is that people are scared. And you know what? And one of the tragedies of this whole thing, really, if we really think about it, is how frightened they've made their own people. You know, for years I was sort of banging on about how governments destroy their own people. And we've got examples in China, in Russia, in other countries. And now it's happening here. And I think people just didn't expect it. And they're scared. And they're frightened of the future. And they really just trying to do the best they can for their business. I spoke to a business owner who said, look, you know, if my staff don't wear masks, I get a £3,000 fine or whatever it is, you know, and they don't want that. So guess what? The staff wear masks all day in this restaurant. So it's very much like that. Yes, indeed, we need to come together. I think the people in Liverpool are a shining example of what can be achieved if you stand up and say no. And a lot more people are going to be becoming braver to do that. Of course, you know, it needs to gather momentum. And really, it needs a bit of time. And maybe it's time we don't have. Maybe it's time we do have. We're winning these battles every single day. And you know, and these people are champions and they're real heroes in society. You know, it's easy for people to stand up after the fact and say, well, I would have done this and I would have done that. Actually, when you're faced with the police in your premises and you're being told to do something and you still do the right thing, you're a hero in my mind, and those people need to be supported and they need to be applauded. And I think the more times that we have examples of this, it will spread across the country like wildfire. And I think it is, you know, in a way, people are fed up. People are confused. That confusion is now turning to anger. And we saw in a town in Ireland, I think it was in a supermarket, some guys smashing up the place. And that anger essentially is spilling out onto the streets, and it will continue to do so. And I think that our job is to calm people down and to say, you know what, there are things you can do. You can support the Truth newspaper. You can support Go Vote. We are all doing the same thing. We're all on the same page. And it's about having hope and hope for the future. And I'm very optimistic that they may not get what they want completely, but we will not lose either completely. And that is an important message to put out there. We are winning this. The world is going to change. The world is going to be different. It wasn't that great before. Let's face it. We were all complaining. And a lot of us had miserable lives. A lot of us, you know, hit the glass ceiling in our respective careers and wondered why. You know, there did need to be changes. But let's make sure that we've got our seat at the table, and let's make sure that we're adding in those changes that are beneficial to the people of this country and not just to foreign intelligences and agendas that are being played out. Because a coup is happening in this country, and it's a very weird coup. It's a coup where your elected leaders, so they're elected, they're fine, they're in there. The people have chosen them for good, bad or ugly. But what they are doing is they're following the agenda of foreign powers. And we have no legislation to deal with that. In this country, and that is something that's got to change. And for the same reason that we've got to stop the government being able to get into debt. If we can do those two things, I think we've got a fighting chance of actually creating a much more, I want to say fairer society, but that's kind of like, you know, the communist language, isn't it, really? I want to kind of say, you know, a society that's fit for purpose. Because really, at the end of the day, what are we doing here? You know, life is for living, isn't it? At the moment, none of us are doing that, really.
No, we're not. The folks can find crowdjustice.com, join the legal challenge to the UK government on health passports. One of the things I liked about that from day one was that you've put it all out there for people to see. I've never supported crowdfunding on the programme for years because some very well-known independent media characters over the years have raised money and then have done a runner with the money. And I never supported those people anyway, but it's made me more reticent to even mention campaigns. But you've got the lawyers, you know, we know who they are, Rafter Marsh, it's all there. People can see very, very clearly what you're using the money for, Zed, which is a very good thing, mate.
And, you know, just to be clear on that, the money does not come to me. It goes directly to the solicitors into their clients' accounts, and it sits there. And, you know, we've just been notified that we've got another 30 days to raise another target. And we've been doing that really pretty much each month as it goes on. And people are saying, well, you know, what happens if it doesn't, you know, if you don't reach the target? Well, we've got enough at the moment to plant our flag and to take the government on. Yes, we do need a lot more, but that's support from the general public, and we can only do so much and put it out there. I know who you're talking about, you know, previous crowdfunding things. This isn't one of those things.
No,
this
it isn't.
A legal challenge.
That's why I wanted to say it. I wanted to make it clear. Yeah. The money goes directly to the law firm. It sits in their coffers, and that's impressive. Yeah, it looks at it's great. It really is. I want to give a plug again to the website. govote.org.uk. You're very magnanimous, because I think you know my feeling about politics and parties. And I'm not going to say it, because my listeners know, my listeners are not here to hear my opinion. They're here to hear somebody else's opinion. And you've sold the idea very well. I don't agree with it, but you've sold the idea very well of govote.org.uk. And I would urge my listeners to take a look at it and make their own minds up. I'm very impressed with it. Before we wrap it up this afternoon, glad you brought up the Light, the newspaper. I don't know if you've seen a physical copy of it. It's terrifically laid out, the desktop publishing. It's a really quality newspaper, and it's a real, I won't say it's a game changer yet. It has the potential to be, I think, but it's a real gift at this time, isn't it, Sid?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the sort of problems with doing things, you know, online is that they're online, you know, and we are trapped into these sort of digital boxes, which we, you know, which is how the Matrix has got us, really, if you want to kind of call it that sort of term. So we go around in these things, and what we've got to do now is get out into the real world. And the Light, the newspaper, does that very well. And in actual fact, I suggested to a so-called journalist who you're not very friends with, and I'm not on very good terms with either, that if she really wanted to be a real journalist, then perhaps she should do something like that. So, you know, I'm very pleased to see this, and this does need to be supported. I'm going to be advertising in the newspaper. We've looked at that already. And people need to really start getting out there. Even if you just, you know, be a distributor in your local town or your local city, these things are really important to do. And if there's any help that I can give, you know, I used to write for newspapers and stuff like that. I was editor-in-chief of a newspaper in the Canary Islands for some time. So any help that I can give, I'm happy to do that voluntarily, of course, you know. And whilst we're sort of, you know, talking about solutions and Go Vote and all this kind of stuff, Go Vote really is a foundational platform. And I like it. And I think with the newspaper and with other things that other people are doing as well, we've really got a good chance of having our voices heard, which is what actually this is all about, isn't it?
It is, mate. GoVote.org.uk, crowdjustice.com. Join the legal challenge to the UK government on health passports. Great to chat with you again, Zed. Don't leave it so long, mate. Really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Can't wait, buddy. All the best. Godspeed, as we say. Zed Phoenix, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show for Wednesday, October 21st. I like Zed. And while I'm on the subject now of newspapers and these things, Jean-Anne Crowley, who's my friend, my great friend and confidant, was on the programme on Monday and went down a storm. You were delighted to hear her. And she was talking about a beginner's guide to the New World Order. Among the many gifts the woman possesses is a gift, the ability to write beautifully. She is a beautiful writer. She really is. And for a couple of years now, we've been chatting. I mean, we've been chatting for about 5 years. And Jean-Anne has been over to stay with us, and we love Jean-Anne. She'll be coming over before Christmas, please God, to spend a bit of time with us. But for a few years, this idea of this pamphlet or mini book, I won't say novella because it would be factual, of course, but she's been mulling it over and thinking about it and all of that. So she gave out her email address on the programme the other night. And she's had a very, very big response to that. And I think she's fairly thrilled with the response. And a number of people, including publishers, have been in touch with her as well, credible people. And that's a lovely thing. There's some good things going on. It's the fight of our lives, this, isn't it? I've, over the course of the last few months, I've tried to shy away from melodrama. It doesn't do any good, really, does it, melodrama? But I think we're in the fight of our lives. And when you see senior editors in broadsheet newspapers asking questions about whether this is a conspiracy, you know that it's getting real now for a lot of people. It's really starting to hit home with people. It really is. And good. As well it should. And many of these people have children. Many of them have children in high school. Many of them have young children. And I think for a lot of these people that are coming out now, Annabel Fenwick-Elliott at The Telegraph, Alison Pearson and others, many of them have children. And it's beginning to dawn on them. It's beginning to dawn on them. What sort of world will we be leaving to our children the way things are unfolding, the way things are happening right now? And maybe my pessimism, I mean, I've never been a pessimistic person. Never. It's not in my DNA to be pessimistic, but I have been very pessimistic about this. And I've kind of resigned myself to the fact, or I had resigned myself to the fact, that nothing was going to stop this. And I was basing that on my own day-to-day interactions with people and my observations of how people have complied completely with this nonsense and have fought with one another over not complying with this nonsense. And I talked about Gogglebox earlier on. But I'm not as pessimistic this week as I was last week. Sounds funny, that. It sounds like I'm almost talking myself off the edge of a ledge. No, I don't. I never get that fed up. And I know some of you have done. You email me. And while the programme gets such a large volume of emails every week that it's actually overwhelming, I do see some of them and I do reply to some of them. Some of you have been in a bad place over this. I haven't gotten that far. You know, I've not gone down that road of being that upset. Not at all. But pessimistic, yeah. But there's been a few things happening that have left me a bit more optimistic this week. I just wish more businesses. That would give me a real boost now, you know. What do you think, dear listener? What do you think? I just wish more businesses would say, fuck off. We can't just sit by while my company, that I've really kind of put my heart and soul into, and my employees, I can't just sit by and watch it all just collapse. I'm sorry, I'm just going to open the doors. And if you want to be in the position as a policeman where you're telling your grandchildren that you tasered a woman because she opened her business and switched on her till and organised her products in her shop, if you want to be that policeman, well, go ahead then, tase me. I just wish more businessmen and women would do it. I know it's vexed Simon Dolan. I know it has. He can't get his head around it. Why would you? I mean, when you ain't got nothing, you've got nothing to lose, right? And seeing the business go down the toilet, why would you not at least do something? I mean, is it the violence they fear? I've never feared violence. Maybe it's because I was exposed to a lot of violence growing up, maybe. It's not because I'm a tough guy. I'm not a tough guy. I don't claim to be one. I don't pretend to be one. But I'm brave. I don't mind getting a smack. I've gotten many of them over the years. I'm not scared of getting punched in the face. I'm not scared of being tased. That's why I wouldn't sit idly by. And if this particular business, the Richie Allen Show is a business, it has to be run like a business or it wouldn't function. It wouldn't succeed. If somebody tried to stop me doing it, I would, if it was the last breath in my body, I would expel it in defence of my right to have my business, to have my show, to operate, to do what it is I want to do. I couldn't just let them say, no, you can't do that because it's a pandemic. And you might kill 82-year-old Bert, who was in a wheelchair with steel hips and all of that jazz. I couldn't just sit there. I this is the thing that vexes me. If more of them said, like the gym owners in Liverpool, no, you can fuck off. No, I'm sorry. No, you're asking me to destroy my life and my family's life and my employees' life. So fuck off. No, do your worst now. Take out your tasers. Show the world how big and bad you are by tasering a chap who's opening his shop. I know what you're thinking. They did it, Richie, in Australia and elsewhere. They did, but if enough of them at the same time said, let's open up. Tomorrow, Market Street, Manchester. Let's open up, all of us. Open up, get back to work, and let's see their hand. See what they would do. I don't know. Back in a minute with more old crap. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show with The Doors.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
Right, welcome back to your Richie Allen Radio Show. Did I mention that Stephen Lendman, do you know Stephen Lendman is 85 years old? What a man. With the most amazing voice you've ever heard in your life. Stephen Lendman is online if you want to get online and read his brilliant articles. You sometimes see him these days still on Press TV. Stephen, I mean, he's just an amazing bloke. He's on with me tomorrow, as is John Waters. Great Irish writer, John Waters. StephenLendman.org is the homepage. 85 from the Windy City. Yeah. He sounds like one of those old actors from those great films, those great gangster films. Amazing guy. He's on Twitter as well, at activist writer on Twitter, Stephen Lendman. Jean Ann mentioned to me just now, and I had seen this on the BBC website, that Spencer Davis passed away, I believe, in his 80s, Jean-Anne. Was he Spencer Davis of the great Spencer Davis group? He's passed away. There is a tune there in the bank of tunes. I've dug it out. Not the one I like. I was a huge... Jean-Anne met him. She met Spencer Davis. She knew from her time in London, she knows a lot of those great people, you know, Jean-Anne. Jean-Anne was once in a car with Carole King. I love those stories. That's the great thing about speaking with people like Jean-Anne. Not an ounce of bragging or any of that garbage. None of that name dropping. Just great stories, you know. Carole King. We play the Carole King album quite a bit here. Sometimes on Sunday afternoons. It's a great easy listening album, isn't it? Carole King's album. What's it called? That album? The Carole King album? I can't think of the name of it. On the cover, she's sitting and there's a cat on the front cover. You see, this is it. I've had one of those days. I'm a little bit on the tired side today. You're never supposed to say that on radio. Listen, if you fancy a career in radio, if you say that you're tired during a live radio show, I'll fire you myself. You never do that. But I've obeyed the rules forever. I can break or bend a few from time to time. Never tell your audience you're tired. They don't want to hear that. They don't give a shit if you're tired or not. Tapestry is the album. Yes, Jean-Anne Crowley. Tapestry. Carole King, great stuff. Had a fling with James Taylor. He did a marvellous cover of You've Got a Friend. I think they remained friends, and they do remain friends, yeah. Great albums, great stuff. Tapestry, Chris Clough is on top of things as well on Twitter, Tapestry. I'll do that someday. I was speaking to a friend the other day, and I confided to my friend. In fact, I confided to a couple of friends. I said, it's very difficult for me to imagine carrying on talking about coronavirus every day of the week. Every day. Right? Every bloody day. Coronavirus. Reminds me of that great Saturday Night Live skit. Remember it? Was it Saturday Night Live back in the late 70s when everybody was sick to feckin' death of Star Wars? Sick of it. I think Saturday Night Live did a skit on the great theme tune to Star Wars, where the cast were singing Star Wars, Nothing but Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars every day. Something along the lines of that, anyway. I feel a bit like that. And I said to a couple of mates of mine, I can't carry on like this. I just can't. It's killing me talking about this every day. This coronavirus thing. So it got me thinking that what I might do. No, I'm not going to do this, by the way. Don't panic. Don't panic. Got me thinking that I might just do a mainstream media type drive time radio show every day. We'll talk about Strictly Come Dancing. We'll talk about Gogglebox. We'll talk about Gogglebox is what we'll talk about. And I'll get a couple of copies of Closer magazine and New magazine. And I'll tell you about Colleen Rooney and how she's absolutely pissed off with Wayne and how she'll never forgive him for shagging all those grannies. And then I'll play some popular music, kids. Anything has got to be better than talking about coronavirus every single day of the week and talking about the health passport every single day of the week and everything else that we talk about every single day of the week. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, there's a bit of that today, a bit of corona fatigue today. So there was. Felt it about mid-afternoon. Mid-afternoon I was listening to a health minister talk on one of the 24-hour news channels and I nearly jumped out the window. I was actually halfway out the window. And I thought, no, don't do it. Don't deprive your listening public of the garbage that you serve up to them every other day of the week. So yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Never thought we'd be in this situation. Every day, coronavirus, coronavirus, coronavirus. But what are you going to do, you know? Might do that. Drive time. I'll get some new jingles made up. And I'll basically show Steve Wright on Radio 2 how to do a drive time radio programme. Because I'm obviously 1,000 times better radio presenter than any BBC radio presenter. So why not? Let's go for it. Next week for the whole week. I'm sure I can get some Z-list celebrities to come on the programme and talk absolute bullshit with me about their latest album or latest book. Why not? Shall we do it for the crack next week? Drive Time Radio with the BBG. What do you think? You up for it? No? No. At least Wayne was shagging grannies and not killing them, says says Jean Ann Crowley. Yes. Yes. Wayne Rooney didn't lock grannies into care homes and hermetically seal them in and board up the windows and refuse to let them outside. No, he didn't. And not only did he not do that, but he didn't then, after locking them up into hermetically sealed rooms, the grannies, what did Wayne do? What did Wayne not do? He didn't then send people with the virus or some sort of virus into the care homes to kill them. No, he didn't. Wayne Rooney has got a penchant. Is that how you pronounce that? Penchant for grannies. He's got a taste for grannies. Nothing wrong with it. I've always admired the older lady myself, Wayne Rooney. Lovely. Keep those tweets coming in there. This is going downhill very quickly. Sooty's Rehab says, when Wayne Rooney was substituted at Manchester United, a TV person actually said, it's not the first time he's been pulled off by a 70-year-old. Referencing, of course, Sir Alex Ferguson, who was in his 70s when he was at the end of his time at Manchester United. That's right, indeed. There's a million gags, but this is a family show, so I'm not going to go there. A lot of tweets came in when I was speaking with Zed, and a lot of tweets came in when I was talking about The Light. The Light, which is a brand new newspaper, thelightpaper.co.uk. Hey, listen, while I have you, Spiro Skouras, often mentioned, activistpost.com, Spiro Skouras on YouTube. When I mentioned that in Korea and the Korean national media, the national press has reported that at least 5 people have died after taking a flu vaccine. Apparently news is coming out of Brazil that somebody has died after having a vaccine in Brazil. Now this is not independent media sources. This is national media sources. People are starting to die. And I wonder if the person who died in Brazil was given the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, I don't know that to be true. So don't go saying that, because we don't know. We don't know, do we? We haven't a Scooby-Doo. But I wonder. You heard that arsehole earlier on. That guy, what's his name again? John Bell, Professor John Bell. He said that the vaccines rushed into production at AstraZeneca and Oxford are being trialled in South Africa. Of course they are. And in Brazil, of course they are. Where very poor people who've got sod all, not got a pot to piss in, will do anything for a few bucks. And often, and I know this to be true, this is not conjecture, often when these bastard pharmaceutical companies are trialling pain medication or the latest cancer drug or whatever, they will give these people as little as $50 or $60 for playing Russian roulette with their health. These companies are evil beyond anything that I could have imagined growing up. People are dropping around the world from taking vaccines. And are you really going to take a vaccine offered to you by the UK government, rushed out in a matter of months? I didn't think so. I won't be taking it either. Whatever the consequences. No tough guy be I. No hard man am I. If my concert daying, Jesus, Richie, this is tiredness now. If my concert going days are over, so be it. Had the conversation with the future Mrs. Allen. We had tickets for Elton John and Jeff Lynne this month. We bought the tickets months and months and months and months ago. I would walk to the moon and back to see Jeff Lynne in concert. So we got Jeff Lynne tickets and we got tickets to see Elton John because Caroline's always wanted to see him. Those concerts were cancelled. Well, Jeff Lynne just cancelled, full stop. And Elton John put the concert back by 12 months. I doubt very much I'll be able to go to that concert. I'll have to sell the ticket. Had a chat with herself about it and said, well, what do you think? Well, I'm not having the vaccine, she said. Sacrebleu. Mange too. That's what she said. Mange too, Richie. Mange too, sacrebleu. I'm not having it, so we just won't be going to see Elton John, presumably. I mean, it's pretty much set in stone now, isn't it? Unless people like Zed Phoenix work their bloody magic. But it's set in stone now that if you don't have it and your health passport isn't displaying that you've had it, well, you're not going anywhere, Paddy. Might be the case. Mange too, she said to me. So I don't know. We might have to hang around outside the arena and have a listen. See, can we hear the strains of Elton John in the distance? And it's my favourite thing to do, you know. Go to a concert. I mean, we've been to see some fucking garbage, you know. We go and see anybody. Doesn't matter who they are. Live music. An audience of people dancing and having fun. It's great for the soul. And it's great when you do it with your soul mate. Wonderful. Or with a great, great friend. Me and Jean Ann went to see Paul Simon at the arena. And to be in that room with Paul Simon singing those life songs and thousands of people around you, smiling from ear to ear, people forgetting the fact that ordinarily they wouldn't give you the time of day. You could meet the same people on a tram or on a train and they would nearly fall out of the fucking tram to avoid having a conversation with you. But put them in a room with music, song. All of a sudden, everything changes and you got people dancing with you, bumping into you, laughing with you. So if I have seen my last concert, well, I've got a lot of great memories to hang on to. Photographs and memories. Photographs now. I've never been one of these dipsticks to be filming at a concert. I fucking hate them. These goons who film what's actually happening in front of their faces. And I love the fact that some of the older legends like the Rolling Stones and Billy Joel, we saw Billy Joel at Old Trafford and he told the audience, he was right, Billy Joel, top man, put those fucking things away. We're here to sing and to dance and to have fun. Turn that fucking thing off and put it away, Billy Joel said. Get in there, says I. Even though I was miles away from him, he looked like a little dot in the distance. But anyway, look, that's what the baddies want to kill. Only connect, as the great Forster once wrote, says Jean Ann Crowley. She's absolutely bang on. I've dug out a Spencer Davis group tune to end the programme. I'll see you tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Until then, thanks to Zed and thanks to Darren Nesbitt. Lightpaper.co.uk. Look after yourself.